what I need to get done before I could actually lay down and catch some shut-eye so that my tractor would be ready to hook up and go. And I remember one time I pulled in, me and my co-driver pulled in, and we were parking it, and we was going to, you know, we just come off a three-day mission. And we decided we was going to hurry up and get everything done, get that truck ready to go again, and we was going to shut down and get a little bit of shut-eye. Well, that's what we thought we was going to do. They turned right around, put us back out, put us on another mission. So.
Now, what happened with your discharge and stuff? Because I understand you had some problems with the stress, and they ended up giving you a personality discharge.
Yes. Well, what happened was is I cracked. I broke down. I don't know what you want to call it. I blacked out. Next thing I know, I'm sedated. I'm laying in a hospital bed there at Camp Dogwood, telling me that they're going to medevac me out. They medevac me up to Longstuhl, Germany. They kept me there for approximately 3 weeks, almost 3 weeks, and then they sent me to Fort Polk, Louisiana. They diagnosed me with a personality disorder and discharged me September 19, 2003 with a personality disorder. By December 3rd, 2003, I was there at BC&B with the VA in Little Rock, Arkansas. They diagnosed me with PTSD and asked me what I was discharged with, and I told them, I said, what? They said, this is clearly PTSD. I ended up spending the first of 2005 in a hospital psychiatric ward being treated for PTSD and depression. Had to beg the discharge board in St. Louis, Missouri to change my discharge because of the personality disorder totally knocked me out of any benefits with the VA. Because according to their definition of personality disorder, that is something that you inherit through your childhood and carry with you through your adulthood. Well, I argued the point that I'm a former military, and if I had a personality disorder, I would never be a second tour of duty in the military, much less be sent to a war. But it was only after I was sent to a war they diagnosed me with a personality disorder.
Now, I know they have been doing this to a lot of soldiers because it does completely cut you off from benefits, is that correct?
As far as I understand it, no, because everything I ask for, you know, claims on a claim for my VA, they said because of my discharge being a personality disorder that they could not grant me any benefits, service-connected benefits.
Now, your whole time in Iraq, what was your total time on the ground over there?
I'll be honest with you, I really couldn't tell you. It was in the months. I mean, I spent approximately between maybe 2.5 months on the ground.
And then it just got to you so bad, you basically just cracked, like you said. So
well, it was everything. It wasn't just the ideal that people wanted to kill you. It wasn't just the ideal that, you know, you're in a totally alien environment. It was the ideal of you feeling like you don't belong to the military you're involved with. They treat you like you're insignificant and like you don't matter. And then you got to deal with the enemy trying to kill you. Then you got to deal with the civilians that are sitting there, you know, basically begging you and pleading with you to throw them a bottle of water, MRE, just something. And then, you know, you get bad news from home. And, you know, it's not just one or two or three different things. It's everything. Everything, the stress where you're at, the stress of what you're doing, the stress of the environment, the heat, the stress of watching people basically die, you know, the stress of the military that you're involved with basically telling you that you're insignificant, you're a National Guard, you're not that important, and you're not very much of a priority. You know, all that together, it just, I don't know, it just consumed me and overwhelmed me.
Now, they basically enlisted you on the whole purpose of helping free Iraq and doing your patriotic duty, basically. That was the main, one of the main drives to get you to go to Iraq, was it not?
Well, the way that they worked it with our unit is our unit was put on standby on alert, and then they went dead with us. No more information came in or out. It was a situation where, you know, you're sitting there wondering, you know, everybody else is getting called up. They said we're somewhere in the top 10 of the transportation units that are listed to be called up. And, you know, it was like an everyday thing. You had to report in and say, you know, well, have you tried to get in touch with me? Is it today? They went through that for about 2 weeks. And finally they called me at work and told me, you know, it's time for you to come on in, get ready to process. We're being deployed. So it wasn't so much as, well, you know, come on and do your job and this is your chance to be patriotic. It's kind of like, you know, a wait to see, a touch and feel thing. It wasn't nothing that, you know, like we were made to feel like we were important or anything like that. You know, it wasn't based on anything like that.
Oh, okay, because I've talked to a lot of National Guardsmen that said that they came around to the units individually that didn't have enough men and called for volunteers, you know. It was, so you basically had a totally different situation than that.
We were a unit. We were under strength. In other words, we didn't have the amount of personnel in our unit that qualified us for being deployed. What they did is they went, and they went all around the country asking for 88 mics that wanted to join our unit. We call them fillers, to come into our unit and actually become part of our unit and go to Iraq. They had, I would say, probably 300 fillers show up, and I think we took 180 or 190 of them. And there was more fillers from different units than people we had in our own unit.
So you basically didn't even have that whole normal camaraderie that a National Guard unit would have from going all the time with each other.
Exactly. These people were total strangers.
Hmm.
Total strangers. I mean, people that I've never met in my life. We had people from Oklahoma, Texas, I think Missouri, different units from Arkansas. This is from different parts of Arkansas. And, no, we didn't know none of these people. And, you know, the only time we got a chance to work with them and know them is when we was at Fort Polk, you know, being ready to be deployed.
Huh, so you didn't, you know, and that's another thing that a lot of National Guard and Reserve units have is that hometown base of support. You guys wouldn't even have had that at home. With no unit coming from the hometown, I mean that's incredible.
Yes, I made it home July of 2003. I was given some time to come home and try to get things straightened out, squared away at home. And when I came home, there was no yellow ribbon. There was a yellow ribbon at the National Guard unit. But I had to go to the courthouse for some reason or another, and I walked into the courthouse, and the only people that had any type of yellow ribbons or anything significant that regarded towards knowing that they had citizen soldiers that were deployed in the combat zone is what individual people would do. They might have something on their desk or something like that. And I went to my courthouse, and, you know, a courthouse should have like a big yellow ribbon tied around one of the trees out front, you know.
Right.
Acknowledging that, you know, the Bible National Guard unit was gone to active duty and was doing time in Iraq in a war zone. That wasn't there. And I went in, I believe, to the mayor and email, and they'll call and try to get me a checkup on somebody in their family or something like that. I said, I'm not even going to tell them about this, because this would break their hearts to know that they're going, we're talking about